begin.
Please note that the following program includes adult themes and language.
You're listening to the weekly show on Discourse.
Oh yeah, I'm back.
Welcome back to Discourse. I'm Morgan Nickel, Big Mouth Dickhead from the internet, and I'm very tired because it's quite late.
I'm Dylan Reeve, consummate professional.
So very pro, definitely pro, actually, much more pro than I've ever been. Jeez, there's so much to talk about, though. It's hard to know exactly where to start. So let's start with our additional fame, infamy, finally recognised by Radio New Zealand National's Media Watch programme. Sort of like being on Crime Watch.
Yeah, for media, which is, you know, loosely what we are.
Of course, it wasn't really about us. It was actually about Ben and the whole .com thing. But they accepted us and name-checked us, and that was quite nice. It must hurt them to do that, because we make a better podcast than they do. So it must really hurt, actually. Probably
they,
have
you know,
more listeners.
They didn't include the URL or anything. So,
yeah,
you know,
nothing like that. Nothing like that. No comments on the show. Not at all. No,
they did at least acknowledge where it came from.
That's no naming half of the voices in the goddamn excerpt that they played.
It's better than, for example, you know, New Zealand Herald's use of photos they find on Twitter.
Oh, photo supplied. Yeah. Photo stolen, assholes.
Photo found on the internet.
Photo conveniently.
Yeah, so they had been up about his appearance on the .com bandwagon.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, I think I can't.
I can't really talk
about that too much, because, of course, I've spoken to him sort of off the record, so to speak. So I don't know really how much I can say about all of that. But I would say that if anyone's being had, Ben is definitely not being had.
No, I don't
he's completely conscious of everything that's happening.
I also don't think that .com's doing that much having. He's clearly playing his strengths, but I still don't think it's as organized as some people would have us believe.
Yeah, that's probably true. Jeez, I tell you what though, when it comes down to people that I don't trust, he is way up that list. Way up that list.
Fair enough.
Yeah. I really think he's not a good dude, eh? So, you know, it's unfortunate that I agree with him on some aspects of the whole thing and hope that the whole case gets thrown out. It's unfortunate that it's him, because I would prefer it wasn't someone who was so demonstrably fucking sketchy. You know, whether or not there's any meat to the current accusations or not. And I mean, we all know, and he knew, everyone involved knew that their site was being used for dodgy purposes. But, you know, is that actually enough?
I don't think it is.
I don't think it's enough. And it's definitely not enough to fly in with helicopters and machine guns. And so, you know, that side of it, I just find completely inexplicable. And, you know, the New Zealand police, sometimes their behaviour is just quite ridiculous, frankly. Just absolutely clownish and unnecessary. They could have sent a community constable up there to have a few words and say, you're going to have to accompany me. And he would have gone.
It still occurs to me that, you know, if they were worried that he was going to run away and hit a kill switch, which was the thing that they came up with, that landing outside in helicopters is a pretty bloody good sign what's happening. Whereas a dude in a suit knocking on the door and saying, can we have a chat?
Yeah.
Not so much.
Yeah.
At that point, you'd have him sitting down at the kitchen table and you'd tell him what was going on, place him under arrest if you wanted to. But, you know, it didn't. It gives him less chance to run off into a safe room and hit a kill switch.
You know, if you're worried about a kill switch, let me tell you what you need to do. Cut the fucking internet cable. You don't need machine guns. You need a shovel. Well, they may have done that, but that's all
and
they needed to do.
And cell phone blockers and God knows what else they'd need. But anyway.
Which is all easily doable stuff and doesn't require any machine guns. Yeah, we don't need the cowboyish thing. I think more guns never helps any situation.
I had been meaning to excerpt the Media Watch program so that we could play Media Watch playing Discourse on Discourse for some sort of podception thing.
Do you remember, I downloaded the file rather than streaming it off their site, so I have it.
It was about 6 minutes from the
end. I'm Colin.
Feeling the same way, particularly as Christchurch rebounds after...
Oh. ...took his friend Jose Barbosa and treaties. They show that even without...
Oh, yeah, there we go, that's
and
a quote.
...and his colleagues. Wish in Gracewood wrote this response given that back on the 19th of January, Ben Gracewood wrote this response to the arrest.
How much of this should we play?
And his colleagues.
Don't know.
We should be celebrating the arrests. They show that large-scale copyright infringement can be investigated.
It's exactly what it sounds like.
Under existing laws and treaties. They show that even without laws, copyright holders can seek remedy.
Well, Ben Gracewood accepted the invitation to...
I've got an idea. Let's see if we can get Ben on.
...his friend Jose Barbosa and his colleagues...
Unplanned.
We should be...
You'll never get Ben on.
Well, let's just find out. Let's see what happens. I'll add him and we can see. Well, it's ringing. We can probably talk about other things while it rings because who knows if he's actually there or not. He's a busy lad, actually, at the moment. You know, he started a new business. Very exciting, actually. Really good time. Really good time for him. Probably quite stressful.
Well, last I talked to him, he wasn't sure if he needed to leave the country this week or not. he possibly had to fly out of the country on this coming weekend, so I don't know where that's got to.
Right. Well, fleeing the country to Germany, somewhere where there's no extradition treaty with the States? Or
probably.
Yeah, that sounds about right, doesn't it? Sounds like Ben's regular jet set lifestyle. Yeah, he's answering about as well as you do, so I'd say we're not going to be able to play that little game, so I'm going to kill that. Never mind. Anyway, yeah, so weird reenactment, just like Crime Watch, actually. Funny that I mentioned it already. Who knew? Who knew that was going to come back? Reenactments, weird reenactments. Because that doesn't really sound anything like Ben, and they must have known what Ben sounds like because he's done a bunch of shows on Radio New Zealand National. So, yeah. I mean, they could have just got him to read it.
They could have. I'm sure he probably would have been. No, he probably wouldn't have been.
Yeah.
Accommodating. But, you know, in those situations, you just wander around the office till you find someone who'll read a thing out into a microphone.
Yeah. So part of the excerpt that we can't be bothered, you know, combing through it also includes my excellent question. I'm so proud of it. Was it a party or was it a piatti? Which I love it. I love it deeply. And I was worried the whole time because it was in the document. I knew I was going to ask that. I was very worried that Dylan was going to steal it.
And God, I wish I had now because I got nothing on that media watch. There was no acknowledgement of my existence. Didn't even sneak in a
Maybe you should just remember to always be mmming.
I will try.
Because Ben was all over the place in his answer.
Yeah,
so there's plenty of time.
I kept coming up, when I was listening to it on the Media Watch, I kept coming up with opportunities to interrupt him and just didn't happen in the heat of the moment.
Yeah.
Oh, well, moving on, that's all done.
My motto is always be interrupting.
Yes.
Like that. Oh, damn it, you only said one word. Damn it!
I saw it coming.
Knock, knock.
No.
I heard rumour today, and by rumour I mean I read it somewhere and I don't remember where, that William Shakespeare came up with the knock-knock joke.
I saw some...
Entrapping cow!
About stuff we wouldn't... So a big thing the other day about stuff we wouldn't have if it wasn't for Shakespeare. There's a lot of expressions and things that we use all the time that were originated by Shakespeare.
That is where I saw that.
According to a random graphic I saw on Facebook.
That's exactly what I'm talking about, the random graphic on Facebook.
Yeah, as far as I know, those things are always pretty accurate.
It's from Encyclopedia Britannica, isn't it? Infographics.
Yeah, usually.
Dylan Reeve, recreational swimmer. So tell me, if Auckland was going to have a flood, it would have a flash flood, am I right?
Very flash.
Because on account of Auckland being the flashest of all cities in New Zealand.
So my office, or edit suite as it actually is...
Is it deep underground?
Well, basically, it's in the centre of a building, on the bottom level... there's no windows. I can't see or hear anything from outside. So apparently it was pissing down with rain. I had no idea of it. And I see on Twitter that there's people who are complaining about flooding. And then next minute, our assistant editor, who's from the UK, comes in and says, should I be worried about flooding? I was like, no, hardly. It'd just be a little bit of surface flooding. And then I went on the Herald and went, oh, shit, that's quite cool. But anyway, she lives on a hill, so she doesn't care.
So I've been spending so much time consuming media rather than interacting with people that I was about to pause you. I was going to pause you so I could get back to talking about this other thing. Because Kevin Long in the chat room just posted up Act 2, Scene 3 from Macbeth by old Will Shagshaft. And it very clearly has a series of, the very familiar knock-knock structure. Well, not so much jokes because it's Shakespeare. And, you know, probably they were funny back then, but I don't know if it's funny now. Man, I hated Shakespeare at school. I'll tell you what.
Okay, Shakespeare.
I'm all over the place. Okay, so here's the thing. Here's the thing. So he says, for instance, way through. Knock, knock. Who's there? In the other devil's name, faith, here's an equivocator that could swear in both the scales against either scale, who committed treason enough for God's sake, yet could not equivocate to heaven. Oh, come in, equivocator. Knock, knock, knock. Who's there? Faith. Here's an English tailor, come hither, for stealing out of a French hose. Come in, tailor, here you may roast your goose. Knocking within, knock, knock, never at quiet. What are you but this place is too cold for hell? I'll devil porter it no further. I had thought to have let in some of all professions that go the primrose way to their everlasting bonfire. Interrupted cow!
I never predicted that we'd be doing Shakespeare readings on this show.
That was wonderful. I enjoyed that. Thank you for
Maybe we should make it a weekly segment of Shakespeare readings.
We could just do a whole performance. Just do all of them.
Excellent. That's a good idea.
It's a long time since I've seen any Shakespeare, which you would have judged by my terrible performance then.
Oh, I thought you did quite well for something I presume was a cold read.
Yeah, it certainly was. I started halfway through and then just kept going for it. So why not? Why not? Hey, you know I'm a trained actor.
Of course.
I am, actually, a trained actor. But my training finished when I was about 8 years old.
Yeah, no. Yep.
Yeah, I did the Water Babies. I may have mentioned it before. I like to mention the very few things that I've done over and over and over again. I've been whitewater rafting, did you know? I got in a fight once in a bar. Etc. You know, very, very few stories, which is why I basically just talk about the news and don't actually bother reading the news. Jake Osborne in the chat room, Morgan reads Shakespeare, funniest shit ever. Thank you. We've actually put a lot of effort into being funny before, so it's a bit of a damn shame that just reading, you know, the immortal bar.
The things that we attempt, when we attempt funny, it isn't funny. It's when we do random shit, such as reading Shakespeare, it turns out to be funny. Who knew?
Apparently. Yep, it's been suggested that it should be a new weekly segment. We could do that. Why not?
It can only work out well.
Next week. Well, maybe we need to have, the act or whatever, the scene that will be read. Maybe that needs to be suggested by listeners. Because if I choose them myself, then I'll just choose easy stuff probably. But if I make it too complicated, no one will do it.
Well, we'll do it this way. Anyone who actually emails us in with a scene from Shakespeare to read that we can practically read.
Yeah. And so you need to identify
two characters, scene. Really.
Yeah.
We'll do it.
Well, one or more. I mean, it could just be one. I mean, I'm very happy just to fill the whole show just with my demos.
From the background is asking exactly how she emails us. So just visit discourse.co.nz and there's a
talkback page. Yeah, go to talkback. Yeah. And actually, people do use that, and so I don't know why I never talk about them. Probably because it's so few and far between and tends to be pretty random stuff. Why do we not get more spam through there? Maybe it's broken. Maybe it's been broken for a month, and that's why I keep complaining about the complete... You know, I feel like I'm talking into a goddamn hallway sometimes.
So far, it sounds like we might be doing Romeo and Juliet next week, if my wife is to be believed.
All right.
So, what else we got?
You could also email comments at discourse.co.nz. That will work just fine. But TalkBack, the form, you know, that's cool too. You know, it means we ask, you know, we get answers to the various questions or things we want to know about you. Yeah. Did I accidentally leave the live stream page? Yeah. All right.
Yeah, apparently you did. Yeah, just decided.
Excellent work on my part. Apparently I don't know how tabs work in Chrome, even though I've been using it since probably version 1, and now it's version 20. How is Chrome in version 20?
Is it agile development where you're constantly making small changes and releasing them?
Could be, you could have 3.3.1 or something, couldn't you?
Is Chrome a public open? Well, I don't know. Is Chrome a public open source project, or is it?
I don't know. I guess WebKit probably is, but Chrome itself maybe not.
Yeah, I don't know.
But actually, funny you should mention that. I mentioned Chrome actually. It's funny funny you should mention that though, Dylan. Thank you for bringing Chrome up.
No problem.
If you've got an iPad or an iPhone, you should quickly rush off to the App Store because who knows how long it'll be there. But Google Chrome is currently in there. And if you use Chrome on your desktop, and you bloody do because, you know, all good people use Chrome. If it's possible to use Chrome, you should. All of your tab syncing, your multi-device tab syncing, and your favorites will all sync to the iPad between all your devices. And that device sync is blooming cool because it means – because I've got two offices. And if I look in you know, on the new tab page, there's an other devices section, and I can see all of my computers, what tabs are currently open in them. And so if, oh, there's this thing over here that I was reading before that I wanted to keep reading, and now I can just open it here as well. And it's very handy. I mean, it's obvious and simple, and there have been extensions to do this kind of thing. And of course, you know, bookmark syncing has been available for quite a while in Chrome and other browsers, but this just takes it one step further.
15 minutes.
And now it's available also on the iPad. Unfortunately, it's a little bit slow, and it doesn't. It's not really well integrated on the iPad, because Apple won't allow Google to use their own engines, and they won't let them use the Safari's built-in engine. They have to use some crappy whatever function it is. I've never done any iOS development, so I don't even know how it works. And also, if you like, now this is actually a problem in a lot of apps. They will have a built-in web browser thing. So like in Flipboard, if you're looking at their carefully formatted article, but it's missing something that you want to see, or you want to see it with comments, or you just want to see it in its original context, and you click on touch that little arrow that says view on web, and then it opens it in its own web browser. But I don't want that. So then you press again, and you say open in Safari. All right, well, fine. But I've got Chrome on there, and I want to open it in Chrome. Guess what? You can't. You can't open it in Chrome, and once you do put it in Safari, you know, there's a little button you can touch to do various interactions with it, and none of those is send this to Chrome. But anyway, that'll be a bit of a, you know, hopeless sort of multi-handling of it in any case. But hopefully, expecting Apple to see the light and be more open, that seems like a mugs game, doesn't it? That seems a bit futile. Raj in the chat room. Probably might as well call him a co-host now, considering how many times we've used him as a correspondent for his comments. You have to jailbreak, apparently, to make Chrome the default browser on iPad. Well, that sucks, doesn't it? I mean, I guess that means that those people who are prepared to jailbreak are away laughing. I haven't done it.
You can't replace any of the defaults on the iPad, can you?
Not as far as I'm aware. Now, one thing I did see, you can get a bookmarklet that you can put in Safari, which will then reopen in Chrome. But you've already opened it in Safari. So, you know, why would you then go over to Chrome? I would rather just use Chrome.
There's a bunch of things. Like, you remember when it was like, didn't Microsoft get sued for this? You know, they lost a court case
in Europe. Antitrust. Yeah, in Europe, and they had to have another version of Windows XP that didn't have Internet Explorer bundled with it.
So there's no way to unbundle the iOS core apps. How come Apple's not getting hit with that sort of lawsuit?
I would say it's because they're in a really weird position where they're very, very they're not even dominant in mobile anymore. I mean, the thing you have to remember is that Android is now, I think, twice or three times the size of iOS. And it's very easy to forget that Android were behind for a while, but now are miles in front in terms of number of handsets.
I guess the other thing is probably also the closed ecosystem, strange as it may seem. I guess if Apple completely controlled the system, then they can just stop competitors coming on board at all.
Yeah.
In which case, competitors can't really complain that their software doesn't work properly because it's not even available.
But they also they fuck over their own developers, you know, the members of their community, by taking popular apps and creating their own versions or bundling versions of into their own apps. So I mean, they go even further, I reckon. Well, that's sort of what Microsoft was accused of doing with the old embrace and extend thing that they used to do once upon a time. I don't know if they still do. Maybe they do. It's just no one really cares about Microsoft at the moment, because even though they're still gigantic,
they seem a whole lot less evil these days.
They do seem less evil. It might just be because of Bill Gates, or it might be because Apple are so obviously more evil. So obviously more evil. Can you imagine what things would be like if Apple had 90% of the computing market?
No, horrifies me to imagine.
It really does, because they don't give a shit what people. I mean, and it's cool that they just make, you know, what, you know, they make what they want to make. They make what will sell to the most people, and that works really well for a lot of people. But then, the people that it doesn't work for at all.
Yeah, I mean, it's while you still have, like, on the Mac, while you still have, for the moment anyway, an open environment where you can install whatever the fuck you want from wherever you want.
Enjoy it while it lasts. It's
not a big deal, but that's not going to... But then again, Microsoft's doing the same thing. In Windows 8, I believe you can only install apps from the marketplace, can't you?
No, that's Windows 8 RT.
Oh, okay, right, that one.
The but weird way, hybrid. God, they're idiots. Yeah. Microsoft are idiots and Apple are evil. It's kind of what it boils down to. Microsoft do so much innovation and we never, ever see it. Because, you know, their tentpole divisions are so threatened by change and innovation. It's why they killed, what was it called, the Courier, the tablet? That was killed for the most ridiculous reasons.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a shame because...
And they were doing multi-touch interface stuff years before Apple did it. Years before. The first place I saw pinch-to-zoom stuff was in a Microsoft Labs demonstration. And it was ages before there was even a hint of Apple releasing the iPhone. So, I mean, the idea that they've copied any of that stuff from Apple is ridiculous. They are an innovator themselves. It's just they seem to be useless at actually marketing new products. What they seem to be good at marketing is fucking Office and Windows, but they're only good at doing that because, you know, they were so good 20 years ago and they've, you know, they've stitched up those
markets. Choice.
So kind of they've got the enterprise and there you go. I'm very worried about what Windows 8 is going to do for us, actually. I mean, I definitely think of myself as a Windows user, even though, you know, I prefer Linux for servers, Debian, frankly, not Red Hat, especially after this week. And I've tried using OS X a lot. I had a lovely iMac on my desk for years on end, and I always found myself going back to my Dell workstation. Always. Just because it just feels better to me. That's cool. You know, it's subjective. That's cool. But Windows 8 comes... So I'm a Windows user. But Windows 8 comes along, and I see the screenshots, and I just think, I don't want that.
Yeah, it's weird to me. I've had quite a lot of offline discussions with Ben, being the only person I know who really has anything to do with Windows 8.
Yeah.
And I just, you know, it's weird. There's some very scary... very scary directions they're heading with that. Like the fact that nothing you know translates to the new Windows.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Anyway, so with Windows 8 normal, it's got the Metro interface sort of as their replacement for the start menu. And I saw this bullshit twisted up newspeak justification for that with people saying that users don't use the start button. I use the start button constantly. Press the start button.
Especially since Windows 7.
Yes, press the start button.
Start typing what you want.
And instantly your app will come up. Instantly you can fire it off. And yes, of course I also pin stuff. Of course I pin stuff into the what do we call that, the system bar. Of course I do that. I've been doing that since Windows 2000, maybe earlier. I had my tiny little double row of little tiny icons. I probably had about 40 of them, and it was wonderful for me. And I was annoyed when Windows 7 came along. Maybe it actually happened in Vista. And you couldn't have those tiny little the double row anymore. You could only have larger icons. I got over it. I got the fuck over it. No problem. But part of getting over it, I think, was the usefulness of the start menu, which has just continued to get better and better and better.
Yeah, the start menu is great now.
So the idea, the justification that they're using for killing the start menu, that people don't use it? Number one, I don't believe that. I think that's a bullshit excuse, just like the excuse for implementing the ribbon in Office, which is a disaster. It's a disaster that they're not going to back down from.
What?
Apparently, is there a bong sound? Am I whacking the microphone?
I didn't hear anything.
Hey, Jose. I didn't notice you join the chat room. I would really like it if you'd come on Skype with us. That would be fun. We're going to play Urban Dictionary Word of the Week.
Apparently. Oh, God, I have to find a word.
Yeah, you still have to find a word. What else has happened this week?
Nothing, absolutely nothing. It's been a very boring week.
You know, I remember today with these flash floods and the idea, you know, on Twitter everyone was making little jokes about, you know, swimming around and how fucking rainy it was. And I remembered sneaking into a swimming pool. And I don't remember if you were there, but you may have been. I know that former philosophy correspondent Ryan Sproul was there. Do you
I don't remember sneaking into a swimming pool with you.
Do you remember Point Erin? No?
No, I've... No, don't think so.
All right. Well, Point Erin is quite a large swimming pool down in...
Oh, yeah, another one. Sorry, forgot the name.
Herne Bay. Sort of Herne Bay, St. Mary's Bay. Maybe it isn't even called. Might even be called Point Erin. But I would say...
It probably
say, is. I don't think there's actually a suburb.
No, it's probably just that little bit at the end where the pool is.
Yeah.
I've only been there once.
Mm. I've been there many times because I went there when I was little and I got lots of sunburn and I was very scared of jumping off the diving board until I got the fuck over it, and then I was very into that. But one night, actually probably a couple of nights, we discovered that if you sneaked around the back, there was a bit where there was kind of a, you know, some kind of utility pumps or who knows what in a little brick enclosure. And if you stood on that, you could get on top of the fence and then you could just jump in.
Brilliant.
And then, so it was nighttime, and we had a huge friggin' pool complex to ourselves, including like a diving board and bomb board and little tiny slides. And so we had so much fun there, but we often did it while drinking, which is very naughty.
Yeah, no, I would have frowned upon that.
Guess how many people got into trouble because of all that drinking we did at Point Erin? The number is zero.
None.
There was no trouble at all. Because most people have a few drinks. Maybe they get stupid. Maybe they do stupid things. Maybe they have sex with people that they should, you know, would not have had sex with if they hadn't gotten drunk. You know, we've probably all been there. I think we've probably all been there. And I've been swimming sometimes when I maybe wouldn't have otherwise because I was drunk. Probably said stupid things. But that's not because I'm drunk. It's just because, I'm a big mouth dickhead. So drinking can make people a bit stupid, but it's also a lot of fun and pretty harmless for the most part. So why is it that Labor, one of their announced policies that they're going to implement at the next election and that they expected National to implement now, was minimum drink prices? Because they think that a bottle, a cask of wine is so dangerous that instead of being $25, it should be over $40. And that is what their figures come out to approximately. Roughly doubling the cost of a cask of wine. Now, I buy regularly casks of wine because there is no better way to make a delicious pasta sauce than by liberally adding cheap red wine. I don't know if I want to pay $50 for a cask of wine. I don't feel like that's necessary because I don't feel like my cask is a problem. I don't feel like it's doing anyone any harm. And it's certainly never done me any harm. So why do I have to pick up the tab for these hypothetical idiots who are getting pissed on, premix bourbon and colas and doing stupid stuff like drunk driving? Because, I mean, the thing is that drunk driving is already illegal and people are already getting caught. And I think that the rate of offending, you know, with the odd blip, for the most part, has been going down pretty consistently. So what's the point in this additional punitive, what do they call it, a levy? Excise? Tax? It's a tax, really, is what it is. It's a tax on all of us because some people are stupid. And I really dislike that. And this is just one more reason why I'm fucking over Labor. But
you know what it is? The thing that bothers me most about it is it's an incredibly inelegant and uncreative solution to a very complex problem.
Yeah.
It's like the no GST on fruit and vegetables thing. Same thing. It's just like, I know, let's just make it cheaper.
They say they've dropped that one
let's
now.
Let's just make it more expensive.
Yeah. Yeah. It's without,
Yeah.
And John Key says he doesn't think there's any point in doing
this. And I don't think there is either.
He says that they tried this in Scandinavia, and I haven't looked this up, so I don't know. He says they tried it in Scandinavia. It's expensive there, and people still get wasted. And I believe that. And I know that it's expensive there.
It seems to me that the people who will stop or reduce their drinking
are not the problem drinkers.
Well, they were very, you know, they're probably borderline problem. They were the borderline problem, you know, the ones who are
I think the people who will stop drinking are the people on fixed incomes, and I don't mean unemployed people, I mean old people. Old people who just want a sherry. And
well, we already had that one. The price of sherry
That's
went
exactly
up,
right.
That whole thing?
That's exactly right. And it will go up again, and it will go up more this time than last time, based on the proposed
And who was
getting,
like, what kids were getting drunk on sherry anyway?
None ever.
They get drunk on bourbon and coke and cheap wine. And even if you put the prices of those things up, and so the number that Labour Party have mentioned once, they've not really mentioned them. In fact, the whole policy is totally undefined. What they want to do is really unclear, like in to the point that I don't think anyone's ever said it.
Yeah.
But once Leanne Dalziel mentioned a number, and the number was $2 per standard drink.
Yeah.
So how many standard drinks does it take to get comfortably wasted?
You know what? I think that will vary from person to person. I'm much larger than some people, so I probably...
Well, let's say 6 to 8, is going to get you...
I think that's probably... I think that medically would be termed a binge, 6 to 8 drinks.
Yeah, and that's what we're talking about, binge drinkers.
Yeah.
People who are preloading before they go out, allegedly.
So that's going to go up. 6 to 8,
so we're talking, what, $12 to $16.
Right.
Versus at the moment, you can probably do it for 10 or less.
Yeah.
Big deal. Is that going to... Is it, you know, your difference of your... Your Friday night spend is goes up by $2 to $6.
Yeah.
I don't think that's going to stop those people. But, of course, the flow-on effects are that everything else gets more expensive.
And meanwhile, me, not preloading, because I don't do that. I just go to bars and get a drink if I want one. You know, when I'm getting my craft beers, I will also have to pay this additional tax. Well, for no reason. I'm not a problem drinker.
Okay, but also the cheap booze goes up. So the cheapest, you know, maybe your cheapest bottle of bourbon in the liquor shop might be what, $35-40 for a proper one, not a watered down one.
Yeah.
And that's going to be about 30 standard drinks. So if you're looking at $2 per standard drink, that goes up to 60, which is what you'd pay for a slightly better one. Yeah. It's what you pay for, you know, maybe a Jim Beam or maybe a Jack Daniels, but a litre of Jack Daniels.
Yeah.
So if that goes up, if the normal cheap one goes up to 60, then Jack Daniels has to go up as well to what, 80?
Yeah.
You know, and it just keeps that effect goes on because the pricing is not, you know, it doesn't cost more to make Jack Daniels.
Yeah.
The pricing is there because it's a premium product. So, you know, the prices aren't going to stay where they are except for the bottom tier. Everything will move up.
Yeah.
So, you know, I end up paying more for the things I like to drink occasionally because some people want to get wasted.
Yeah.
So it punishes us and it does, I'm convinced, very little.
Yeah,
to address the problem.
I agree. Those people are not preloading because they don't preload. I need to straighten this out. Give me a second here. Give me a second to get my thoughts in order. They will not be comparing the new price with the old price and deciding not to drink. They will be comparing the new higher supermarket or bottle shop price with the new higher bar price, and they will still be choosing to preload because it will still be cheaper. It will still be considerably cheaper.
I mean, the bigger issue is I don't know, our culture or something, but how do we address that?
Slowly.
It's deeply ingrained.
Slowly, yep, slowly. Well, but the thing is that we can make those, you know, some people call it social engineering. We can make those changes. It is possible. We did used to have a worse violence problem, I think. And I think it is a bit better now than the domestic violence problem. It's still a problem.
I think that's improved.
But it's still a bit better. I think that the drink driving used to be a huge problem. I think it's a bit better. I think the speeding was a giant problem. And based on my limited experience with driving around, that has changed considerably. I think New Zealand drivers have got the message and have slowed down quite a bit. It is possible to make those changes, but it just isn't instant. And the thing is that kids are always going to make stupid mistakes. And with, you know, the huge media cycle we've got now, you know, we get a bigger story when little things happen. I mean, if we're hearing about stupid fucking brawls in Queen Street on the evening news, we know that we've got very few problems going on. We know that things are good, actually, if that's the big news.
Question, what do you think of Dry July?
I think Dry July is ridiculous. I think if it's a challenge for you to go a month without a drink, you're an alcoholic and you should go the rest of your life without a drink.
That's a problem I have. That's the thing for me as well. I'm like, why should it, like, why are we sponsoring people to go a month without drinking?
Yeah.
Jesus.
Just stop drinking. If it's an issue for you, just stop drinking.
It's very strange.
Yeah.
Like, you know, normally those sorts of things, you know, do this thing for a cause. It's like doing something that is either a bit challenging, you know, like the 40-hour famine, you know, it's quite hard. Well, mind you, now it's not actually going without eating. It's doing something else, but whatever.
It's ridiculous. It's pussified.
Just eat the damn barley sugars. 40-hour famine. Or you know, the Movember, you know, growing a moustache is a bit...
Yeah.
Risky
seems pretty
people.
Easy. Seems pretty easy to me.
Yeah, it is. But but the Dry July thing, I just find it really strange.
Yeah, it's weird. It's weird. If it is a challenge for you to not drink for, oh my God, a whole month, then you probably should think a bit about whether you should be drinking at all. And I mean, okay, so raise money for charity. That's cool. Do that. But maybe just give them money rather than doing a bullshit exercise. Let me give you another example of stupid approaches to trying to curb problem drinking. And this is actually from France, because they've passed a law. The law was approved in 2011, but it's about to come into effect in November. In France, it will be mandatory to carry a breathalyzer in every car.
Huh.
Whether you've been drinking or not, mandatory to carry a breathalyzer. The fine is pretty small. It's 11 euros, and I don't know how that translates to New Zealand dollars, 20-something dollars, I guess. But it's along the same lines as requiring, which they also require a fire extinguisher, a first aid kit, and so on. You know, that all makes sense to me. Breathalyzer is a bit weird. I don't believe that drunk people will bother. It's not like the car is tied into the breathalyzer. It's just a little thing in the glove compartment.
I'm pretty sure the New Zealand police have actively discouraged people using those.
Yeah. I've got one. And they're right too, because those things aren't carefully calibrated. It's like, so what is the point of having that? So you have just enough drinks that you're just under the limit. That's a really bad idea.
Yeah.
What you should do is not have any drinks if you're going to drive.
It seems a strange.
If you can't tell if you're drunk enough or not, you're drunk.
Yep.
It's a pretty simple rule of thumb. So we better get on with the show, actually, because I've got so many stories that I'm just going to keep doing them. Lord, let me give you another example. If you make booze inaccessible, and if you make safe drugs inaccessible, guess what you get?
A black market.
What you get is a couple of teenage boys in Dunedin huffing LPG, because it's what they can get their hands on, setting themselves on fire, having an explosion in a house that knocked down internal walls and blew out windows, and are now critically injured. One of whom has been put in a coma, has been brought up to Auckland for treatment. The other one, I think, is horribly injured, but not quite as badly. Would they have been doing that if they had a bit of weed? Fuck no. Of course not. Would they have been doing that if they had some beer? No, God, why would they? Why would you do it? It's LPG. It's like holding your breath.
So there's been a talk of drug testing beneficiaries.
Yeah.
Which started an interesting discussion on Twitter I saw.
Yeah.
With someone questioning whether the New Zealand government was the largest funder of illicit drugs in the country.
From the Dole?
Yeah.
I really strongly doubt it, because I think that the Dole is actually, I don't know how much it is now, but I think it's not that much.
Generally not very much. I mean, it varies.
I think it's not that much.
Other supplements, you know, other allowances, but yeah, it's not a lot. Yeah, I would imagine that people with disposable income spend more money on more expensive recreational drugs than people on the Dole spend on presumably very cheap weed.
Yeah.
But you know, there was this discussion happening, and I said then to someone who thought it was inappropriate that this should be happening, that then the clear solution was to legalize marijuana.
I agree. I think it's obvious.
Not decriminalize, but legalize, because then you can
legalize and tax. Yep.
Yeah.
Tax and regulate. Absolutely. Now, what are they called? In the Netherlands? Amsterdam.
I also suggested that the Dole puts far more money into tobacco company and alcohol company pockets than it does into drug dealers.
And pokies.
Yep.
And so on. Yeah, it's tough. I don't think it's fun to be unemployed. And I think that the people who are unemployed find whatever ways they can to entertain themselves. That's tough. I mean, I don't want to punitively punish people, but if people really are making the excuse that they can't apply for a job because they do drugs, they should fucking stop doing the drugs.
Well, I think
one of the requirements
jobs because they're doing drugs.
Well, are they getting that far? Because I mean, what I heard from the media was that people were making the excuse that there were drug tests, so they weren't applying, not that they were failing tests.
Yeah. Right.
I think that I believe that it's a requirement of being on the Dole that you have to be looking for work.
That's the gist of it, yeah.
And if you're making excuses to, I don't even know, your case officer or whatever it's called, if you're making excuses like that to your case officer. I think that the next step should not be mandatory drug testing for all beneficiaries. What it should be is mandatory drug counselling for people who say that's their excuse. And you know, the threat of the reality that if you are making that excuse, then you're essentially not living up to your end of the bargain, which is looking for work.
Yeah.
If that's your excuse, then you're not really looking for work, are you? And it's time for you to give up the weed. And if you don't give up the weed, then I'm very sorry, but you're no longer going to be able to have the benefit. And that's tough, but, you know, if someone... Marijuana is not addictive. You know, it might be habit-forming, but that's not the same, right? It's not like heroin or nicotine. It's not like people can't stop getting on the spliff, right? It's fucking easy. You just don't do it because it's not physically addictive.
Well, interesting. One of the biggest recreational marijuana users I knew decided at some point in his later life to become a helicopter pilot.
Right.
Which requires not having any drugs in your system at all at any point.
Yeah.
And he just stopped.
Yep.
As far as I know, he hasn't touched marijuana or anything else since.
Yeah. It's not addictive. So if someone says, I can't apply for that job because of my drug use, you have to say, you have to stop using the drugs. Or maybe, you know, it becomes a condition for that person to continue receiving the benefit that they will get a drug test in a month. And if they pass it, then they're fine and they can continue applying for drugs. Applying for jobs.
That's a good plan.
I mean, it seems like just use some judgment. In the individual cases, I believe that all these people have face-to-face meetings or over-the-phone meetings, in any case, regularly with their caseworkers. So just use your fucking nouse. Treat individuals as individuals and don't treat all beneficiaries as, you know, drug-taking layabouts. Some of them are just in areas where they can't get work. And it's not because they're on the weed. It's because they're in a fucking small town where, you know, it's seasonal work or who knows what. Anyway, there are a whole lot of reasons for people to be unemployed. Some are very, very bad, and we need to do something about that. But treating all of them as bludgers is not the solution.
No, I hate that sort of hyperbolic approach to this sort of thing as well, where you take the worst case scenario and apply it to everyone and then create solutions to fix that.
Yeah. I've heard that National want to put drug-taking beneficiaries into a crushing machine. and squeeze the juice out of them and then sell the elemental components of their bodies to China for use in electronics manufacturing. Have you heard anything about that?
Yeah, no, that's a definite policy.
42 minutes. So let's do... Oh, one thing. Let me say. So Joe Karam, supporter of long-suffering, poor, innocent David Bain, who murdered his whole family, Joe Karam is suing Kent Parker, who's the head of a group called Justice for Robin Bain, for defamation. Now, I don't know what Kent Parker said about Joe Karam, but I'm very pleased now that I've always taken the view that Joe Karam is sincere in his belief that David Bain didn't do it. But David Bain did do it. But I absolutely believe that Joe Karam believes he didn't. He's just wrong is all.
You'd hope so. Now, seeing as we have so little time left,
yep.
I've got an idea.
Oh, yes.
You shut the fuck up and I read some of my stories.
Okay, be quick.
Great. Remember Charles Carrion?
Yes.
He's been suing more people.
Oh,
actually,
fuck.
That's not true. He's just suing the same people.
Yeah.
This time. So the Oatmeal's fundraiser finished.
Yeah.
He raised $220,000.
Oh, good work for cancer and for animals.
Cancer and animals. And Charles Carrion has attempted to file a temporary restraining order to prevent the funds from being dispersed to anyone.
Yeah.
Of course, he did it too late.
Yeah.
Filed the restraining order after the funds had already been dispersed. And in fact, he knew that.
Yeah.
But he tried to basically, well, not after, but during the window in which they were to be dispersed. He filed the restraining order that late, presumably, or at least according to Indiegogo's lawyer, to manufacture an urgency.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't think that's gone anywhere, but it's just more Charles Carrion insanity.
He's actually being sued himself now.
Is he? By whom? I haven't been keeping up.
Someone started a satire site called something like, you know, douchebagcarrion.com. And he is suing, like, register.com and the person who is known still as John Doe or whatever. And that person has now got a pro bono lawyer who is suing him back because he said in a threatening legal letter, you know, I can sue any time between now and 3 years from now, and that he's not going to, you know, the John Doe, is that what they call John Doe's?
Yeah,
John Doe's not necessarily going to have a pro bono defense in 3 years, so you won't be there, and I'm going to sue him, and I can sue him for whatever I want. And so the pro bono lawyer said that means we can try and get a judgment of whatever. I don't know all the legal terms. I'm not a lawyer. Give me a break. But he's being sued now to basically define legally whether or not he has a case against that person, which means
45 minutes.
Hopefully he would be told that he has no legal grounds for making any case, and that means that those threats of ongoing litigation would then dry up, because it would be quite terrifying to be told by a lawyer that he's going to sue you sometime between now and any time in the future for anything that he wants. I mean, that's quite a worrying sort of a threat from someone who essentially has no costs in making his applications against you. Anyway, it was your story. Go on.
Weird.
Yep. It's your stories.
What else have I got? Sorry, I was just looking at something else.
Facebook email farce.
Oh, my God.
.com purchase.
The Facebook thing.
PlayStation Rage.
Ridiculous. So we know that the email was changed to @facebook.com.
Yep, and mine was changed. Yep.
Yep. And then miraculously, with the integration of contacts and things like that,
yeah.
The @facebook.com address has replaced the primary email address in some people's, mainly, I think, iPhone contacts.
I don't want that.
No. And delightfully, it replaces things like perhaps that might have been there before, like maybe work email addresses.
Oh, those motherfuckers. They're such assholes, those Facebook guys.
Yeah, so that's really weird and a bit useless.
Yeah. Next story.
Next story.
PlayStation Rage. .com. All right, go on.
.com purchase. Yep. Stopped by rumours of FBI interest. So, I hadn't heard anything about the story before, but what I saw in the Herald was a confirmation that what department was it? It was something weird to me. That a government department, I'm just going to fill in momentarily perfectly while you don't notice this, the Department of Labour's Immigration New Zealand officials passed information to the Overseas Investment Office about potential FBI interest in .com shortly before his application to buy the Coatesville mansion was rejected.
Right, and that had previously been accepted, hadn't it? That was one of the scary things. It had been accepted, kind of.
The minister involved had suggested that yes, it should go ahead.
Yeah, and then he changed his mind,
changed his mind after receiving this information, which was there wasn't actually anything going on here then.
Yeah,
so it's a bit weird. And the Prime Minister's office, quote, according to an email sent from the Department of Labour, was involved, although exactly what that meant is in dispute, whether it was the actual Prime Minister's office or the Department of Prime Minister and Cabinet.
Yeah.
But anyway, it's all a bit weird. So there's that. The other one, what else did I have? Oh, God, I'm not even going to read that one.
PlayStation Rage. Well, I want to talk about this PlayStation Rage one. It's PlayStation Rage, killing and maiming children. This is from Stuff. Now, the story here is that the opening paragraph, young men are getting so caught up in gaming consoles, they are lashing out at children, sometimes with deadly consequences. But one of the pull quotes from a so-called expert, possibly a real expert, I shouldn't say so-called, I apologise, I withdraw that comment. Dr. Eleanor Carmichael from Waikato Hospital says, you sit down, this is a direct quote according to the article, you sit down, take a bit of pee, start your PlayStation game, the baby starts to cry, you're in a hurry to pick it up and settle it down before you lose your place. Now, do you think it's the PlayStation or the pee, doctor? What's the problem? Is it the fucking pee, which is known to make people aggressive and insane, or is it the PlayStation game, which is known for people getting stoned and sitting there playing racing games for 12 hours? Which is it more likely to be?
The game.
I'm sure you're highly qualified, and there are other words I would like to use to describe you, but we've just spoken about Joe Karam suing people. So I'm going to use, you know, a little bit more discretion. Doctor, P or PlayStation, which is it? Fuck, I'll give you two guesses. God damn it. So you know what's good?
What's good?
Urban Dictionary, word of the week.
Mm-hmm. Did you hear that?
Oh, yeah, okay. Find a word.
Urban Dictionary, word of the week.
Have you not found a word yet?
Cupcaking.
Cupcaking. I know exactly what cupcaking is.
Okay. Which way are you going to go with it?
Cupcaking. I know exactly what this is. This is something that you often do if you're in the office and you've got a sweet tooth and, you know, you're pretty well organized. Or if you're at home and you're by yourself, but you really want something fresh and sweet and warm. What you can do is you can put the ingredients of a cake into a coffee mug and put it in the microwave, and you can cook that, and it will kind of puff up and cook and sort of inflate out the top, sort of a little bit like a souffle, and you make a cake right in a cup, and you take it out of the microwave, let it cool down a little bit, and away you go. You've got a cake in a cup. You've just cupcaked.
That's great. That's exactly it.
I knew it. This Discourse Weekly Show.
Oh, no, sorry.
Urban Dictionary.
We've got a winner.
Word of the week. What?
No, it's just corrections. Flirting or being flirtatious.
It's cupcaking.
Yeah. No. Or alternatively, there's a second definition here. It's the one that's got the most upvotes and downvotes and stuff. The second definition is leaving a large group of your male friends to go to another room and talk for prolonged periods of time with a girlfriend or girl you're interested in. Neither of those.
Yeah, I think mine would definitely be the third definition, the most widely upvoted. Obviously.
Okay.
Obviously.
I don't actually see it in the list here, but I will look into that.
I think it's probably there. Facebook, Facebook are stupid idiots. I hate them. Yeah. They're huge and they're dangerous. I think they're probably very smart. I think they're probably very intelligent. They've got really clever engineers there, but they're dicks as well. But they've done something right. They've added new status icons for gay marriages and so on. So, so previously, if you said we got married, then it would put an icon up of a man and a woman. And if you were gay or lesbian and you just married your wonderful spouse who you're proud of and love deeply, having the wrong gender represented in the icon, that would be a bit frustrating. But now they've got male, female, male, male, and female, female, which, good for them.
What, nice, no male, nice female, female?
I don't think that... They probably should have that in the Arab world.
Yeah.
I wonder if they have got that in the Arab world.
No.
Because there are plenty of countries where it's perfectly legal to have multiple wives. That's an excellent point, Dylan. I don't see why they shouldn't allow that.
I don't either.
I think that's a good idea. And an excellent suggestion, Dylan. Chart. What killed us then and now? This is actually, I put this in the show notes for last week, but it was so great making last week's show that I guess I ran out of time. What have we got? 8 minutes? Plenty of time.
Okay, what killed us then?
It's an excellent chart which shows the causes of death. I think it might just be the states rather than globally. In 1900 and the year 1900 and causes of death in 2010. The number one killer in terms of deaths per 100,000 with about it can't be 200, can it? Is it 200? Is it really 200 per 100,000? Maybe it is. Is pneumonia or influenza?
Oh, good, we've nailed that. That doesn't kill
It's still
much
a problem.
Anymore.
Instead of killing 202 people per 100,000, now it kills about 16 people. I've just been asked for the link in the chat room, so I'm going to feed that in there. It's in the show notes, of course, as well. Previously, it was, I'm going to read from the bottom to the top, pneumonia, influenza, tuberculosis. Seriously, tuberculosis. So easy to solve now. That was about the same rate as pneumonia, influenza. Gastrointestinal infections.
Oh, sounds nasty.
Don't even know what that is. It's something we don't really have now. You have some antibiotics and it goes away. Heart disease, still a big problem, actually, obviously. 137 cases per 100,000. Cerebrovascular disease. I guess, is that a stroke?
Oh, yeah, maybe.
That is something with the brain and blood. So I don't know exactly what it means, but that's what it is. Nephropathies, I guess, presumably that's something to do with kidney disease. Nephro, that sounds right, doesn't it?
Sounds
accidents, 72.3. Cancer, senility, and diphtheria. Now, the only ones that are even big enough to have their description on them are heart disease at the top and cancer, second after heart disease.
The overall deaths per 100,000. Between 1900 and 2010, gone down from 1,100
to 600.
So what's that? Yeah, to like 1% to 0.6.
Yeah.
There you go.
Huge change. Suicide wasn't even represented before, and now...
Alzheimer's disease is a cause of death, is it?
Oh, absolutely. No, yeah.
Didn't they could die from Alzheimer's?
Oh, no, no, it's horrible. Things. No, it's horrible.
Okay.
Yeah, it's really horrible. Alzheimer's is absolutely no laughing matter.
Is that what would have been categorized as senility? Because that turns up on the old thing, but not the new one.
It could be, but who knows what they counted as senility back then? Just, I don't know. I mean, does senility imply that they had to have gone a bit demented in advance? Or is it enough just to be old and have a heart attack? Does that mean you don't get counted as having heart disease?
So things that killed us in 1900 that don't even register at all anymore? Tuberculosis, gastrointestinal infections, that's it. Oh, it's senility. And on diphtheria.
Yeah.
Diphtheria. Yeah. That's quite a hard word to say.
Yeah. So it's really interesting to see what has changed. And a big part of the change is... antibiotics and vaccination.
So we die less. That's good.
We die less. Well, the death rate is still 100%, unfortunately. But
it is.
You know, if you maintain your current trend, Dylan, you might beat the curve.
He's hoping.
You know who didn't beat the curve? Two Chinese men suspected of trying to hijack a flight in China. That was the smoothest of all segues. Suspected of trying to hijack a flight in China were beaten to death by passengers. But it's actually quite an interesting one because there weren't two hijackers that were killed. There were six hijackers, two of whom were killed. They were all taken. The men apparently pulled apart a set of aluminium crutches and used those as weapons, trying to break into the cockpit and attack other passengers. And the passengers took them down, tied them up, and I guess beat the shit out of a couple of them. But the story actually goes a little bit deeper. There is a claim, and these men were all Uyghurs, which is a minority group in China. China, let's not forget, is huge and contains very different groups of people in it. So I guess, what are they called? Han? The politically dominant group. But these Uyghurs, they're the same people who had a bit of a riot last year, which involved the death of about 200 of them, and that was between Han and Uyghurs. They basically don't have much in the way of political power, but then who does in China? Only the very wealthy appear to. The claim is that these Uyghurs actually weren't even remotely trying to hijack. What the whole thing was actually just an honest brawl on the plane about a dispute over seating. I have no idea who to believe on this, because the people making the claim that it was a seating issue, not a hijacking, is an Uyghur group. And so, I mean, who knows if they are actually can be credible, because they're obviously not independent. They don't want it to. They don't want any kind of clampdown on their people who are already pretty harshly treated.
Yes.
You know, it's not very easy to have freedom of religion in China. They do not like any religion other than communism, which, you know, they essentially get people to treat the state as their higher power. It's no fun and to be in lots of countries and be religious. But I tell you what, you should try being atheist on the planet Earth. Actually, I do not get oppressed ever, so I should not say what I just said. But I do sometimes get judged.
Yeah.
It's not so bad in New Zealand, actually, in terms of, being secular, because most of us actually are, I would say.
Apparently, we're the majority non-religious.
I don't think that's true. I think a majority still claim to be Christian, but most of them don't really mean it. But that's my non-statistically valid interpretation, because most of them, I think, don't really believe in God, and if pressed, would admit that, and definitely don't go to church.
Right. Oh, well.
Yeah. I think the stats, though, say that we are a majority
religious.
I thought
we had identified as majority. Maybe that was Australia's majority, atheist or non-religious, rather.
Yeah, non-religious. Non-religious. It's not safe to use that word, atheist.
Sorry, no, we're 42% non-religious.
Hey, I've got an idea.
In the latest census.
What's your auntie been talking about?
My auntie's been talking about two things. How long have we got? We've got not very long. Native Affairs on Māori TV. Julian Wilcox hosted an hour-long debate between a bunch of Māori MPs, Brendan Horan from New Zealand First, Shane Jones from Labour, Honi Haruwera from Mana, Te Uruwhenua Flavel from Māori Party and Materia Ture from Green and Tohinare from National. And I tell you what, I was very surprised. Number one, Shane Jones from Labor, incredibly unconvincing, couldn't stand him. Another reason to distrust Labor. He wasn't very good at giving straight answers. Brendan Horan from New Zealand First, completely out of his depth, actually seemed a bit ridiculous.
I saw comments on Twitter to that effect.
I was most surprised, though, by Toe, because he was just pretty straight, actually, and he had pretty good answers. Now, with the stuff about asset sales,
five.
I think he doesn't honestly believe, but he had good answers when it four. Came to gay marriage and so on and other things that came up. So,
three.
Māori TV taking the place of TVNZ7.
Two.
Cool.
See you in the overflow or next week, one. Whichever comes first.
You're listening to The Weekly Show on
Wisconsin.
Don't forget to rewind the tape.
All right, we're using that one.
You're listening to Extra Large on Discourse.
And there's actually another thing to go in. What's your auntie been talking about?
What's your auntie been talking about?
And that is Mock the Week, season whatever, hosted by Dara O'Brien, has just started up in the UK. This is, if you've seen the TV3 show 7 Days, you will see a certain degree of similarity. That's because the 7 Days format is directly lifted from Mock the Week. Only
it's inspired by.
Only directly lifted. Directly lifted. It's identical, but less talented.
Right.
Identical, but not as funny. The format, there is no variation between the two, is there? They play all the same games. They do all the same things.
Never seen it.
Mock the Week is absolutely brilliant. It's hilarious. J-Bard NZ in the chat room. Hugh Dennis is amazing. And holy shit, this is still J-Bard NZ. Holy shit, this week's episode was fantastic. And it's true. Last night, I had to stop watching it because I was watching it on VHS in bed on my iPad. I was watching it on the 14-inch TV with a VCR attached to it out of the top corner of the wall. Obviously. That's obviously how I watched it. Obviously, that's how I watched it. And I was laughing sort of silently, but so much that I was starting to shake the bed. And so I had to stop watching it. And even though I'd stopped, I was still having to kind of bite my fist to not burst out laughing because my lovely girlfriend was fast asleep next to me. And if I
does it make sense from here?
It completely makes sense. There are some references that you won't get, but it's not important because it's so funny the bits that you do understand that it doesn't matter that you don't know some of the names, you know, some of the events. It's not important, some of it.
Right.
But it's so funny that, anyway, I absolutely love it and it makes me just laugh and laugh and laugh and I really enjoy the show. So my auntie's been talking about that, Mock the Week. Great show. And really it is exactly the same as 7 Days. So I don't really need to describe the format to you. You have a host and then you have six comedians, three on either side, in kind of ostensible teams that don't really mean anything. And they
and
talk about the news of the week. And points don't really matter. And they announce a winner and it doesn't make any difference. And, you know, and they look at pictures and they do replacement voiceovers for video clips and so on. One thing they don't have is the thing with the kid from a primary school who's drawn a news story. I haven't seen them do that, but probably they did that in the first season or something. They probably did that in an episode that I didn't see, and it just didn't go well enough, so they didn't keep doing it. They only keep doing the stuff that's really, really funny, because that is not the best part of 7 Days.
No.
But anyway, I think 7 Days is good. I don't want to seem like I'm hating on 7 Days. I think you should probably watch 7 Days. Support New Zealand comedy on television.
But there's an
perfectly good show. But the original, it's not inspiration. The original that they ripped off, they probably actually paid. They probably paid for the format. The original is just, it's just better. It's so good. It's definitely worth watching if your auntie's got it for you.
Sounds cool. I might check it out. I have to dash. I am immediately having to dash.
All right. Perfectly good.
So the shortest overflow ever?
No, our shortest overflow ever is no overflow, and we've had heaps of those.
Oh, there you go. So it's the shortest overflow that isn't a no overflow.
It's one of the shortest recordings, though, on account of not much setup time.
Oh, there you go. Maybe you can kind of roll it all into one or something.
No. All right.
Thanks for having me. Sorry I was late. Have a nice evening.
You too. And thank you, listeners, for joining us. He's talking like he's only talking to me and he's forgotten that we've got an audience.
No, I was talking to all of you.
Oh,
sorry,
okay.
Sorry for being late to the download.
You're talking to the chat room. You're talking to the chat room?
I don't know. Whatever.
You should actually apologise to the chat room. They're long-suffering, those guys.
Tara, have a good week. I'll see you next week when I'll be not forgotten. I won't have forgotten about it and I'll be, I don't know, more prepared. I'll have two words of the week standing by.
Oh, yeah. I should get the thing that I never, ever have ready and should definitely put on the soundboard, which is...
Fish and chaps, fish and chaps, fish and chaps.
The show is cancelled. Beep.